Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today as we begin our program by talking with you about a new book about the inner lives of animals. I just finished reading it about a week or so ago, and I tell you, I was mesmerized by the information in it. Dr. Karen Shaner is our guest today. She's from Washington, D.C., with us by phone, neuropsychologist, co-author of the book Bats Sing, Mice Giggle. It's published by Totem Books. And she has she's had many appearances in the media. She's hosted a radio show for 5 years for NBC, hosted her own psychology show on the Hearst ABC network, and again is co-author of the book Bats Sing and Mice Giggle. And really looking forward to hearing your questions and comments as we move along today. I think you're going to hear some things that will be quite surprising. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Dr. Karen Shaner, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us.
It's wonderful to be with you. Thank you so much. And as I was writing the book, there's so much in here that I thought I knew what was happening around me. And in fact, every time I walk out my door now, I am so much more aware of animals, and it's a mind blower. It's kind of something I had lived in Africa. I raised a baby cheetah. I'd done a lot of conservation and studied the human brain and also animal brains. But this is what is really going on, and the new technology is able to validate, if you will, such as bats singing. They really do sing and compose their own songs. Mice do giggle, and so do rats when they're in the lab, and if you tickle them. But it's much more than that as far as the communication and the emotions that they're showing.
I'm absolutely amazed at some of the things I read, and I have to really compliment you for putting together this wealth of research across such a broad range of, from insects to plants to animals. It's just really fantastic.
Well, thank you. It was such a pleasure to be able. Well, it wasn't a pleasure while I was doing it. I was telling you, I was the first time I never stayed up all night in college, but to get all of this done so we have cutting edge science and we have the latest, as of May of this year, the latest research. But it was as if I was on another level of thinking, this is so exciting that I just want to get it out there. And so thank you for giving me the chance to do that.
Well, I tell you, it really does. One of the news items I read said the work really upends many of our assumptions about the inner lives of animals and shows pretty much beyond a shadow of a doubt that our abilities, that they share our abilities to think and feel and sing and dance and giggle and problem solve.
And show emotion in so many ways. Exactly. And it's not to make us any less. It's just to make us aware of so much, really in awe of what's happening around us as we all grow and improve. And as we interact with the wildlife around us, we not only learn and improve and even pick up things that we had forgotten we had, such as animals do predict earthquakes, and they do know how to communicate it to others. Up until recently, many humans didn't believe it, especially scientists, but now the scientists know that because they have the research to back it up. Of course, those of us who have lived in earthquake areas such as California or Chile or something have always said, we know the animals know something.
Yeah, absolutely. And you, one of the interesting things you reported on, the tsunami, where the waves went in like 2 miles inland.
Yes.
And couldn't find any dead animals afterwards.
Exactly. That's what we started the book with, to give the whole idea that, in fact, the head of Yala National Park in Sri Lanka said 22,000 people died and no animals, no leopards, no elephants, no rabbits. He said animals sense disaster. And so we start out the book saying, what do animals know that it's time for us to understand and even remember about some of the things that senses that we had that we have not been paying attention to as humans.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the new technology has the new technologies that we have really made a difference and really been able to prove many of these things that some people at least supposed.
That's right. At a very, for example, a very high level, how to pick up some very high frequencies that not only bats are giving off, or that the mice give off as they squeak and giggle and laugh and babble, but even higher frequencies that animals communicate and pulsate to each other, such as these annoying little, I call them shield bugs, but some people call them stick bugs, that are wanting to get in now that it's getting cooler around here. Well, in fact, when they are during the spring, one is sitting on a leaf and actually pulsating at a very, very high frequency level and vibrations. And another one is picking up those actual pulses, which are very, very intricate. They may go two or three pulses and then an exact 5-second pause and then coming back again. The codes that animals give off, such as the little moles under the ground that one will hit its head against the dirt of the tunnel, and 100 yards away, another one will pick up those vibrations by putting its little jaw against the tunnel, where isolated tunnel where he is. I'm just struck by all of the things happening around us.
And I was even night crawlers or earthworms.
Yes.
Tell that story.
Well, there are several things. First of all, in the South, which I didn't know about this, but in fact, what they would do to get... first of all, it's important to remember when earthworms are moving along, and especially if there's some kind of information they want to give out, they leave a little bit of a trail of mucus. And the other worms know whether they're their pheromones, I should say, chemicals that we can smell and pick up senses. You'd never know I did 5 years of radio. I'm so excited. And I'm excited that you've read the book so thoroughly, too, by the way. I want to compliment you. So the worms are out there, and if there's any danger, they give off information to each other. However, there are the night crawlers underneath, and in the South, in Louisiana, for example, they used to put a stick there and kind of take a Brillo pad on the top of the stick that had been punched into the earth and rub it back and forth. Well, that gives off the same sound as the moles under the ground. So suddenly all of these worms come, as one researcher said, they come running out almost of the ground because they think there are some of the moles under there to get them. And there are the fishermen standing right there to pick them up to go and get some fish for the day.
Amazing. Well, I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. By the way, you can call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org as we talk with Dr. Karen Shaner about her book, as she co-authored, Bats Sing, Mice Giggle. And Kurt in Springbrook, we'll go to you first here. Kurt, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello, yeah. Kurt.
Yeah, I have a few points I'd like to talk to your guest about. Number one, I used to be a logger, and I was wondering, can the creatures in a forest warn each other that we're coming in to, like, say, clear-cut a forest? Secondly...
Well,
she's got a great story about plants in her book.
Yes.
But go ahead, I'm sorry.
And secondly, it seems like the indigenous, the tribal peoples that lived here before we showed up, had to know this. I mean, they just had to know it. I mean, there's got to be some kind of record of them trying to communicate that to us.
Well, and I hope you'll research that, by the way, because this is opening up so much as we are even aware and validate. And, of course, they did. And I lived in Africa for a number of years. I was a Peace Corps volunteer in Somalia and taught science there and actually raised a baby cheetah when I was there. Yes, there's a lot going on that in our Western industrial society we've kind of closed ourselves off from, even if we have a hunch about it. So I'm sure, and perhaps as we get now, science is validating what people have said for many centuries, we'll find out more and more. But I hope you'll research, too, and maybe call in as we do another show of this type. Back to your first question, I start out the book, or in one part in the book, as we talk about how insects pulsate and give off electrical fields to each other. The first chapter of the book is called Supercharged. And it talks about not only electric fish that give off electrical vibrations or pick up the electrical frequencies of their prey or communicate to their mates, but so many animals that pick up electrical frequencies, or even we'll talk later about how birds can see the actual magnetic lines of the earth and how that happens. However, talk about an original study in which there were subjects that one would go in and actually crush the leaf of a philodendron. And there were nine other subjects, human beings all, who would go in and would be just fine. And the one who was the leaf wounder, if you will, when they all came back in one by one, the plant gave off a signal of an alarm. And then later on, that plant gave off an alarm to other plants. So in answer to your question, I'm sure that's happening. And now at Max Planck Institute in Germany, they're getting even more precise studies of the electrical impulses at many, many different levels of plants and how plants warn each other and communicate and deal with whether it's pollution, the irritants around them, or the irritating people are coming to chop them down.
There you have it, Kurt. Thank you very much for calling. Quinn, and I found that very fascinating.
Yes, I hope he'll follow up on it. Maybe we can do something later, and he'll tell us what he learned.
Quinn in Oshkosh, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Quinn.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hello.
Yes, I was wondering if you had heard of the author, Irene Pepperidge. She's a research scientist who had...
Of course, Alex.
Parrot.
Yeah.
Alex?
Yes, Alex the parrot. Yeah, you talk about that in your book, Dr. Shaner.
Oh, good. Oh, I'm interested in your book, for sure. I wanted to make a comment about the language ability of this parrot, that he could communicate our language with us. And do you know of any other studies where there are other animals that are actually able to pick up our language and use it, such as this?
Well,
it was so fascinating.
They're doing more and more. We talk about the big brain birds. So it's the African gray parrot, Alex was, and also Irene is still studying a number of the parrots that are learning this as well. And of course, Alex would make up his own words. Not only that, studies of parrots, and we have a neurologist friend here, Richard Restick, has a bird called Toby. And I talk in the book, there are about five pages focusing on what the parrots are able to do, and as you mentioned, make up their own words. Certainly a lot of research on chimpanzees, and Professor Prebram, that I teach with at Georgetown University, is one of the leading neuroscientists of the 20th century, years ago had set up a lot of the studies with Washu, the chimpanzee, had the sign language. But, of course, to the sign language, and also an ape, which is still a gorilla, I should say, still at Stanford with Penny Patterson, who is been teaching some language for a long time. And that basically they do make up their own words, such as I love the example with a chimpanzee with kale. Instead of, they called it chewy lettuce.
Ah.
So, yes, and it's really, and I had many animals can do this, certainly many birds, and a lot of animals around us. It's just that sometimes they don't have the mechanism to speak in the same way that we speak, and we haven't listened to what they're saying in their own ways.
Yeah. Well, you know, what really got me about the Alex study was I did hear her on public radio. She was talking with, I think, Fresh Air, and the bird was talking, and I was just doing stuff in the kitchen, and I heard this bird say that it wanted to go back. And I work at a rescue ranch, and I know that the horses, when we're working with them, really all they want to do is go back. And when I heard Alex say, Can I go back now? I thought, oh my gosh, that bird actually is seeing what he's thinking, because that's exactly what animals think. That's how they think.
And you must be very in tune with animals to know, you know what signals the horses are giving off, how they're trying to communicate with you. It's just that we don't know what to look for or to listen for, each in their own way. And yes, Alex made up a lot of words, and also, parrots have a sense of humor. They not only have a sense of humor, I talk in the book, Bats Sing, Mice Giggle, about jokes that they make up. They make up their own jokes. And it's really phenomenal, and it is fun. And by the way, in addition to the book, we have a website, Bats Sing, Mice Giggle. And part on that website, we do talk about Alex and some of the other gray parrots that have been African grays that have been studied.
Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate the call. Dr. Karen Shaner, co-author of the book Bats Sing, Mice Giggle, our guest here. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Dr. Karen Shaner, our guest today, co-author of Bats Sing, Mice Giggle, published by Totem Books. Great to have her with us today. It's a fascinating read. I know you're going to enjoy it. When you get a chance to read it, it's written in a style that is for the layperson, I think, is pretty easily understood. I understood it, so pretty much anybody could, I think. I really enjoyed it. Dr. Shaner, I had an email from Phil who just had a comment. He said, I've noticed, especially in spring when I'm mowing the lawns, the robins start to keep me company. I'm thinking that the power mower agitates the ground enough to set the worms in motion, and then the robins can find them. Is that crazy?
I think that's very, very logical. I'd never thought of that, and because I don't use a power mower. So, in fact, I don't even use a hand mower as often as I should. But even that, any of that, that's very smart, of course. And also, they know that we're going to cut the grass for them so they can more easily get to and find the worms and the different insects around.
Let's turn.
They've got us figured out, don't they?
They sure do. Therese in Hales Corners. Let's go to you now. Hi, Therese.
Hi, good morning. Hello. First off, I want to say I'm really excited about this book and can hardly wait to read it. And one of the reasons is you just kind of confirm one of my practices. When I find a bug in the house, I feel guilty about killing it, so I'll take it and set it outside, and you know, my family thinks I'm crazy. But the two quick examples I wanted to give you about why I have believed that you know, our animals have emotional lives is with two different dogs, two different examples. One real quick one. Years ago, I was watching the movie Fried Green Tomatoes, and I was about to cry when you think that the woman in the nursing home has died. And my Yorkie jumped up in my lap, and her big eyes are looking at me like, oh, Mom, don't cry. And then I burst out laughing because you find out the woman didn't die. She just moved rooms. And my Yorkie looked at me, and she got up and went in the front, you know, so she could face me, and her head tilted one way or the other. And she looked at me like, are you going to cry? Do I comfort you? Are you laughing? What, you know, lady, you're confusing me. And then the other one, which is really touching, is one of our Yorkies had died, and she was at the emergency treatment center. And we took our other surviving Yorkie in so that he could understand what had happened to her.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very agitated when we walked in because he knew he was at the same reaction as when we take him to the vet. Not very happy to be there, very nervous, shaking. When they brought the Yorkie in who had died and she was wrapped up in a towel, he looked over, like sniffed her, and it was like he got it. He sat down as calm as could be and just sat in my lap. And I just thought, you know, he figured out what was going on. And, you know, I know we tend to reflect the way we feel about things onto animals, but I just had that feeling that he knew what was going on.
Well, and I've heard so many stories, even in my cousin's situation, where he's a physician, and he said that, you know, our dog came in and knew that my uncle had died before the physician even knew it, or any of the medical, and actually came in and came back to get their attention to bring them to him. So they can sense at many different levels. And in many ways, we know, for example, the sense of smell, for example. They now have
cancer.
Dogs that can sniff people's breath for cancer because there are certain elements there. But certainly their reverence and this sense of what is going on with somebody. Elephants, for example, there have been a number of documentaries showing elephants that take care of a sick elephant, and then when that elephant dies, they have a procession, a ritual in which they walk around that elephant for almost 2 hours in a very sad way, but a ritualistic way as well. So, yes, of course they sense these things.
It's amazing. And now this will give me more patience with our two current rescue dogs who have all sorts of neuroses. So.
Well, and that you are aware, and I think more and more of us are aware and listening and saying, this is really happening. Let's pay attention. Let's not say that it doesn't happen. Let's realize that it is happening around us at many different levels and become aware of it and in awe of it, but also learn from it. And, for example, we had a tornado where I live. I live right across from Rock Creek Park here in Washington, D.C. In August, we had a local tornado right here. And both of my cars were squashed by a big tree that came down on them. The police officer told me that about 10 minutes before all of this happened in the storm, that the deer started running. And he said he wondered why they were running. He didn't know what was going after, coming after them. And he saw a lot of things happening right in the park, and especially just groups of deer running as fast as they could. They were sensing something that we didn't understand.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, for calling. I appreciate it. And just while we're talking, our last caller mentioned a dog dying. I'm remembering back to a piece in your book where you talk about ants building cemeteries for their dead.
And that's not to say that they feel things in the
right.
same way we do, but
right.
it's very interesting. E.O. Wilson at Harvard, professor at Harvard, has a wonderful book out called Superorganism, that in fact the colonies of ants and bees, it's almost like one organism, if you will. But ants have hospitals for sick ants in which they heal them, and also they set them aside so that they don't, I guess, infect other ants. I'm not sure, but they know to put them in a different place, and they have cemeteries for their dead. So we weren't the first to think of this.
Well, let's turn to Terry and Muscadet next. Terry, hello to you.
Hi. Hi. Yeah, this is ironic because I called. I just finished reading the book Oscar last night, which is about a cat in a nursing home who would crawl up on people's beds about 2 hours before they passed away.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I wondered if maybe you already have shed some light on that and if there was scientific evidence regarding that behavior.
Well, most of it is anecdotal in terms of because we just don't set it up because we don't know how to set it up. And I told you, many physicians will say, and people in the healthcare system will say that they've noticed this, and certainly within our own families we know this. However, with our technology in being able to understand the first part of the book, we talk about sensing behavior in animals, how animals sense things at many, many different levels. And so in that respect, yes, we do explain how they sense a change in the electromagnetic forces around them, that dogs can sense when somebody is going to go into an epileptic seizure. Well, in that case, we know with the EEGs of the brain that, in fact, the seizure is a burst of electricity, if you will, in very simple terms. And the dogs can pick up on that. Certainly, as we get sick, and when we are sick or when we're sad and different emotions, they can pick up on this as we can from each other, but we just haven't credited ourselves. And certainly when somebody dies, there is a change, we do know that, in the electrical frequencies as well. So it's connecting the dots in many ways in terms of what science has been able to find out and how we see this in all parts of our lives.
Yeah. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Brian in La Crosse, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Brian.
Yeah. Hey, hi.
Hello.
I had a good question. I mean, when you meet somebody from New York, they have a certain accent, or from the South, or from, you know, Ireland or London. Do animals have accents?
Yes, they do. They have dialects. They do indeed. They've been doing research, especially, by the way, I was born in Chicago, so every once in a while you'll hear a Midwestern something from me, but I've lived many places, but I'm Midwesterner at heart. Dialects among prairie dogs, that's where they have really studied it, and those that live in the desert have a very different dialect than those that live in the forest. And in some ways you can see that, because in order for the sound to carry, it carries in a different way. But my colleague, Jag Kanwal, who studies, he's a biophysicist and studies bats. He has 50 bats in the basement of Georgetown University where we teach. Who knew? And I still am not allowed to go and see them because, you know, people who aren't working with the bats, they're afraid they'll give the bats diseases. So, but Jack has said that, in fact, they were getting their bats from Trinidad at one point, and then from an area in Texas, and then another area, and that these bats actually had different dialects, if you will.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Good question.
Yeah.
And it makes sense, and it's, mostly it's prairie dogs that we've studied, but I would imagine a New York, an animal in New York has a different accent than, let's say, somebody in Alabama.
Let's turn to Nick from Indiana, driving through the state. Let's go to Nick. Hi, Nick.
Hi.
Hello. Just a couple short anecdotes. The earlier email with the man talking about the robin showing up when he mowed grass.
Yes.
Yes.
Last summer, I had one bird that every time I mowed grass would show up and follow me around the yard. And it didn't matter when I mowed. 5 minutes after that mower started, that bird was there.
What kind of bird? Do you know? What kind of bird was it? Do you know?
It was just a little, we call them barn swallows down here in Indiana.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And every time I mowed grass, I guess it would hear it and come and follow me around the yard.
Well, you're kicking up insects.
Yes. Well, and they're constantly on alert, and they're telling each other. I put seed right out in my office window on the second floor and right across from the park. And the minute I put seed out there, or I can even open my window or call, and especially the cardinals, the chickadees, and the titmouse, they all are communicating to each other, and then if I don't remember to do something, they send a cardinal to come and tell me, because I guess they're the brightest ones, color-wise. They really do. They are constantly watching. Well, you can see they have to in order to survive.
Yeah.
I also wanted to tell you about a dog my wife and I had for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
He learned early on, whenever we said the word treat, whether we were talking to him or not, that he thought that's what we were telling him. So we started spelling it whenever we weren't wanting him to pick up on that. Well, pretty soon when we spelled it, he decided he deserved a treat also. And it actually got to the point to where my wife at times would be doing a crossword puzzle, and she would ask me how to spell a certain word, and I would spell it to her, not thinking what I was doing. And he would start barking, knowing that I had spelled a word, and to him that meant he deserved a treat.
Well, and you picked up on that, and yes, I hear so many stories about this, and we talk in the book about how, in fact, they know that many animals, like little babies, they first of all start out, mammals especially, but other animals as well, where they start out babbling a little bit, and then they make more sounds, and babbling, and the giggling, and then forming sounds. So they're very in tune with sounds, and much of it is basically when you're raising your, let's say, the dog that you're raising to be obedient and to be aware of things, it's along the same line as raising your children. It's all the same behavioral modification, and then trying to outsmart them as they outsmart us.
Yes, they do.
Thanks for calling, Nick.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And Joanne, let's go to you now in Rochester, Wisconsin. Hi, Joanne.
Hello, Joanne.
Hi. Hi, I actually have one really good story and one that's a little sadder, but when I was pregnant with my first daughter, I have a horse, and we're very close, but she never was really a head butter. You know how some horses do that, where they're just always rubbing you with their head? She never really did that. And when I was pregnant, she would just come up to me and rub her head all over my belly all the time. And it was like she knew... You know, like
Absolutely.
What was going on.
Absolutely.
And then as I got bigger, and actually the day I was, that actually I came home hours later and my water broke and I had the baby that day, she kept kind of nudging me more. It was more than just like a rub. It was like this nudge, like, okay, it's your time. You get out of here.
Let's help it out.
or something. And I didn't really think about it until later. And then after the baby, then we were talking. I was talking to my husband. He said, weren't you at the horses? He's like, because it was like a week early. And he's like, oh, no, what if it made your water break? And I said, no, she was very gentle with me. But she kept pushing me like out the door, like, all right, go on. go on. Like she knew. And a few years later than that, my not-so-happy story was I ended up having a miscarriage, and they sent me home to let it resolve itself. And all three of my cats, who normally sleep with my husband because he's very hot, stayed right with me. Mm-hmm. They did not leave me the whole weekend. Even when I'd walk somewhere, even when I'd go in the bathroom, and one of my cats does not go in there ever. And she followed me the whole weekend.
They know, like, and they care, and they sense so much, and it's up to us now to, as you have understood and appreciate what we have going on around us that really reinforces and helps us as we reach out to others. It's really quite... I hate the word awesome. It's overused, but let's say it is awesome.
Yeah.
It's awe-inspiring.
And it actually made a big difference to see how that I have a child with Asperger's and to see how the animals interact with her is amazing.
Well, and you probably know now that they're using more and more, and we're learning how, because the animals already know what they should do. We're learning how to use, especially dogs, to work with children with autism.
Yeah.
To develop relationships and cues and interaction, which then helps the brain develop, because our brain is always changing and developing. So we can do certain things to help that along, and we're learning more and more how to bring animals in to teach us and to do some of the things that they know to do naturally.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joanne.
Well, I appreciate the show today.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much for calling.
Very much so.
And Patricia in Maple, let's go to you next. Hi, Patricia.
Hi. What a great program. I really appreciate the work and the viewpoint that your guest has. Just a quick comment on anybody who's ever made hay in the summer up here knows that the minute you start your diesel tractor, the seagulls arrive because you just cleared a space for the mice. And it's just amazing to watch them just float ahead of the tractor. And in some cases, you see the little mice actually trying to defend themselves, and they get carried away. But it's sort of like the lawn tractor stories that you've been telling. But I do appreciate so much the viewpoint that I wish more humans could see. And sometimes, Larry, I wish that you could have a show that you know, when you have your wildlife people on and so forth, instead of saying, well, there are, you know, too many bears or too many whatevers, maybe you could just flip it around and just the show could be from the eyes of some of the critters, and it would just sort of be a different viewpoint, even to the extent of if you're a weed, your viewpoint. And I know that sounds crazy, but that's my thought.
No, that's what we're doing today.
That's exactly what we're trying to say and give out there and say, this is what is really happening around us, and science is validating it, because in our culture, unless science validates it, sometimes we're afraid to say it's happening. And it is so amazing what we are validating now, and what we all should know, that as several people have said, you cannot read this book and be the same person afterwards.
You know, and to go, you have some direct observations of your own. I recall one in the book where you observed it had to do with a duck.
Mm.
And there was a plop in the water. You were along the water. I think it was you.
Yes, I was there with several. I was a student and studying in Italy, and we actually went up to Vienna for on our way to Russia. And in fact, I'm reuniting with some of the students I mentioned in the book after all those years. We are sitting there on a quiet bench looking over at the Habsburg Palace area, beautiful pond in a beautiful area, and quite elegant. And suddenly there was this thrashing around, and we looked, and in a tree that was kind of hanging over the water right in front of us, a duck had come from the other side of the pond, had picked up something and brought it to the bank and set it down. And we realized it was a baby bird that had fallen out of the tree and would have drowned, obviously, had the duck not seen this and done something about it. And then the duck stayed there until the mother bird came to take care of the baby and do what needed to be done to get everything reestablished. And then the duck walked along, went back into the pond, and swam over to the other end of the pond where he or she had been before.
That's an absolutely amazing story. Patricia, thank you again. And Eric in West Salem, maybe we'll give you a chance here. Hi, Eric.
Good morning, everybody. I just want to say this program is, like many others, so exciting. I did want to mention a book that I had read by Peter Tompkins called The Secret Life of Plants.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't know if your guest is familiar with this, but anybody who reads this book, you could go in knowing nothing about plants, and you come away changed. I mean, so
that's
changed.
That's correct. And again, the vibrations. Now, over the years, because that came out a while ago, mm-hmm. and a lot of science has said, well, that didn't work. Well, guess what? Now some of the leading scientists at Max Planck Institute in Germany over the last several years have been even going deeper into how sensitive plants are and how they communicate, and I quite agree with you. It's being aware of the amazing things that are happening around us at every level of life.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Dr. Shaner, thank you so much. What an enjoyable 45 minutes. Thank you very much.
Well, me too. And I hope you'll have me back if you don't mind, because I want to hear more about the times of the hay and the cutting the grass. I've learned so much.
Well, I tell you what. Now, you mentioned that you have a website. And what's that website again?
It's the title of the book, BatSingMiceGiggle.com. It's BatSingMiceGiggle, one word.
Yeah, and of course, and that's the same title as your book, and that's
exactly.
Published by Totem Books.
That's correct, and it's out in all of the bookstores, and in fact, I think I was just learning this morning, I'm probably going to be talking about it on Larry King next week.
Oh, well, it's a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
You are the real Larry.
Thanks, Karen.
I've enjoyed it so much, and thanks to all of your listeners as well. This has been really very inspiring for me as well.
Dr. Karen Shaner, Washington, D.C., a neuropsychologist, co-author of Bats Sing, Mice Giggle, published by Totem Books. And I tell you what, it's really an amazing book. She's put together, she and her co-author have put together just an amazing amount of research on animals and plants, and I'm pretty sure you're going to enjoy reading it. That's for sure. And pretty sure you're going to enjoy our next guest, too. Our weather guy's back. Must be the last Monday of the month to talk climate and weather with Steve Ackerman and John Martin, next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.